I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. And yes, it is,
February 3rd.
Yes, it is Friday. Where's the calendar? The calendar's covered over by the log. It's Friday, March 2nd. I got to turn up the volume. Now I can hear myself talk. It's Friday, March 2nd, 2024. Thanks for tuning in to Out There today. For today's show, I might play some clips from last week's show in case you missed it. I had a couple of some clips that I brought back from my travels to Kentucky. But more importantly, I have a live guest in the studio today. My friend Shira has been in town. Shira came down from the hill towns to help us finish re-roofing our garage and to enjoy the luxuries of easy access, easy biking, walking, public transit access to the amenities of Florence and beyond. Here, this is a perfect time to play a song while we get the mics going.
Nanny, I'd be a big old nanny right there.
Oh, that is not a song. That was from that auction, the livestock auction in Ewing, Virginia, and somehow that's playing. Well, I meant to play Buffy St. Marie, and then I'll get back to me and Shira.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the walls. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon to the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. But his orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
All right, thanks for listening to Out There. That was Buffy St. Marie. I'll dedicate that song to Aaron Bushnell. Now, Shira and I are going to try to mics again. All right, Shira, talk. What's your name?
Hi, Ruthie.
Can you talk loud?
Hello, Ruthie.
No, something's up. You're okay. We're going to share mic one then. Oh, no, no, no. I got it. The slider buttons. Try again. Talk again over there.
Ruthie, Ruthie.
Ah, yes. Ah, yes. Try mic four. Okay. I apologize, listeners. I hadn't been in the studio for like a week. I forgot how things worked. So that's mic four, the one on top. Shira, how was your day?
Oh, it was nice to have the sun come out a little bit. I had a bunch of phone calls. Yeah.
No, you gotta really
close.
Try that one.
How
try it. Yeah, now we hear you.
Yeah, I went out for a little pruning of the currants and the pears. Put some Petal People stickers on buckets for compost. I have a class that I've been taking through Sterling College called Surviving the Future, which I highly, highly recommend. So I had a meeting up for that class today, which is pretty terrific. We talk about, it's a climate aware international group of people where we get to really just explore how we're feeling and what we're thinking and what we're doing about that whole situation and to read up and learn.
Oh, Sterling College, is that like a physical college, an online college, or what is that?
I think it's both. So this was an online class, but there's a physical location in Vermont as well.
Oh, cool. I went to Holyoke on the bus, well, buses and my scooter, my kick scooter, and to meet with someone named Jacob who works at BCCO in Hartford, which is a bike co-op, kind of something like the Bike Lab or Bikes for All. I haven't been there yet, but I have a lot of bikes I'm trying to pass on, and Jacob may have a use for some of them in Hartford, so we got together to talk about bikes. So Shira, I have a little list of things that we might like to talk about. So how did you get to Florence from the hill towns last week?
So I biked down. Rather than going Route 9, I went Chesterfield to 143. So it's my first time trying out that route. And it's not that many miles, so it feels like it should be really easy, and it's mostly downhill. But it was pretty hard. Uh-huh. It's really hard, so I got to get my legs stronger.
It was February, and you had a mountain bike full of gear too, right?
True. I had panniers on and my sleeping bag strapped on and stuff like that. And it was a sunny day, although it was one of those mornings that was those really cold mornings that we had. I waited till the sun came out a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Back in February.
So long ago.
So some of the things that Shira and I have in common, we both like to live this like simple lifestyle kind of thing. So Shira, I've heard there's some people in America who choose to live without refrigerators. Do you have any thoughts on how a person could possibly do that?
Why would you do that? We have so many supermarkets and convenience stores and processed foods and packaged foods. Why would you do that? Things supposed to live forever, right?
Yeah.
Expiration dates are a weird thing.
So I wrote up a whole note card once of strategies for transitioning to refrigerator free. For me, I like the idea of not being so dependent on a refrigerator because, well, for one, they're noisy and they use up lots of electricity. Though compared to other things that we use nowadays, the amount of refrigerator uses relatively make it less and less.
When I lived in a studio apartment in Montreal for a while, and I realized I was having dreams about airports and airplanes. It took a while, and then I realized it was the refrigerator like turning off and cycling back up. Refrigerator cycles.
And then like if it's a cool place and you, well, once I was sleeping, I think I went to visit my brother in DC, I think when he lived in this little apartment in DC years ago, and I was sleeping on the floor and someone in the kitchen and someone opened the refrigerator door and I was like, oh, all that cold air is falling on me.
Ruthie, so I stopped using a refrigerator at my house. I was thinking back to when that happened, and it was after doing an activist walk across the country. Mm-hmm. And we did have refrigeration for the group, but there's something about, like, you know, being not having that much with you and the liberation that gives you that, and also really thinking about, like, how much electricity do you need and when. And so that's because I was living not in a house with a lot of people, especially. I feel like, how do I justify using all of that, those resources just for me? And it was also really fun to figure out what I can do instead. So that's pretty much when I stopped using a refrigerator.
Yeah, we didn't mention the refrigerant and those, all the embodied energy and the cost, the money cost, all those things, and the space that they take up. So how was that transition for you? How did you have to think about things differently or do things differently?
Well, I was definitely brought up in a home where it was very clean. The kitchen was very clean. The house was very clean. And so a lot of concern about things going bad and making yourself sick and like fear around that. So it's also been informative living in other places and other climates and seeing like people leave stuff out and it's actually not such a big deal, especially if it's something that hasn't already been refrigerated. Yeah. So like I worked on a farm and I learned that if you don't refrigerate the eggs, like they actually last a really long time. Unless it's really hot summer in a hot, hot space. But most houses, most areas you live in are going to have some space that's cooler, like a garage or a basement or something for summer months.
Mm-hmm. And what about like leftovers?
Oh, so I pretty much when I make something, I eat it until it's gone before I make something else for the most part. So leftovers, I'll put them, yeah, in a cooler spot or I'll just leave them out and I'll just eat them until they're gone. So it's not an issue. I don't waste food, really. I sort of eat everything and I don't worry about it. And also, actually, another thing, I remember talking to a friend, a woman who was vegan and we realized like, oh, you know, part of the reason that refrigeration is less important to me is because I don't have a lot of animal product. Yeah. So certain cheeses will last fine anyway for a while. But if I'm not doing milk and yogurt last longer anyway, and I don't have a lot of meat around, so it's less of an issue.
Yeah. Yogurt's amazing. I've visited people in other houses who get things lost in their fridge, like the Catholic worker in Knoxville. They get donations and stuff. Sometimes they get little yogurt cups lost in their fridge. And I've had cups of yogurt that's been sitting in the fridge over a year past the expiration date, and they've been totally fine. I actually came across one that was 2 years past the expiration date. Well, a year and a half past the expiration date a couple days ago. And I gave it a lick. It tasted fine.
Well, I mean, my sweetie does have a refrigerator, so when I'm visiting there, we obviously use the refrigerator, but it's amazing to me because there'll be leftovers that are still there from the last time I visited, and for me, I'm like, oh my God, it's been 2 weeks, and they're totally fine because they've been in refrigeration. I'm like, wow, that stuff works. You know, bizarre. But also, something that is strange is now I'm used to foods more at room temperature, and so eating something out of the refrigerator feels really weird because it's so cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my Honduran relatives, like after food has been cooked, they just leave it on the stove, even if it's meat, and they'll eat it again the next day, 24 hours later. But if it is put in the fridge, they won't eat it after that because it's like it's been denatured or something in the cooling process, and it's just not right anymore.
Yeah. I was, when we said we were going to talk about this, I was thinking also that when I moved back to the hill towns recently, as I've been getting to know the neighbors and they find out that I don't own a car and I use my bike and walking, the first thing most of them asked me was, well, how do you go shopping? And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't really go shopping. So there is that, like, you would think that if you weren't going shopping that often, you'd have a lot of things at one time and then you'd have to store them and they'd have to last longer. But because I think the things that I'm eating largely have never been refrigerated, it seems to not, like, it's not a problem. They're not, like, then cooling off and trying to get, I think that must be, part of what makes them fine.
Yeah. Wait, so if you don't go shopping, like, where do you get food from?
Right. I do buy bulk grains. Uh-huh. So I have bulk grains in buckets, like rices and barley and sometimes beans, those kinds of things. So when I do get something, we have a bulk buying group, and I'll get those in large amounts. And then there's no reason to go very often. And then I love foraging. Like, nettle season is coming up, which I know a lot of us are really excited about. I've been experimenting a lot with growing perennial vegetables and perennial greens, different sorrels and nettle, and I'm going to try Good King Henry this year and Turkish Rocket, and arugula self-seeds really easily, and mashtas also. So That's a rat and chickweed. So foraging, eating weeds, especially in the spring, chickweed, plantain, like all sorts of stuff like that. And that's just always out there. So you just pick it and eat it. And it's always fresh. And then we dehydrate a lot of things. So in the winter, I'm making a lot of soups and reconstituting things. Like we dehydrate mushrooms and beans and pole beans and tomatoes and eggplant if we have any. So things like that. Yeah.
But you got a craving for those crunchy, juicy things in winter. What do you do about that?
Oh, yeah. Canning. Yeah, we can also. Like dilly beans are my favorite. Oh, and also spaghetti squash. Because if you don't really cook it, it feels like it has that vegetative quality.
And like, but do you get like something really tasty, like apples or carrots from somewhere sometimes?
I found where I'm living now, there are some farm stands within a few miles. So what I consider walking distance, which is like 4 miles. I'm not going to talk about the rest. Actually, you know what? No, we do when in town, we do collect, we started composting programs from a few different places, like from a lunch program. So sometimes when we bring back, this is with Tony because he does it by car. He picks stuff up. Sometimes when we go to dump out the compost, we'll see there's like entire buckets of beets recently, for example, and most of them are really good. But for the food program, it's like too much work and they're a little squishy or they got other donations. So I'll just process a whole bunch of those. I'll pickle them. Fermentation is another great way to do it. So, yeah, we eat at the compost bucket sometimes, but it was like food until the second it went in the bucket. So we're not really concerned about it.
Yeah. That's a lot of waste, food waste. You talked about perennial vegetables. You mentioned perennial greens, lots of perennial greens, a nice list of those. But like perennial vegetables, what's that?
Aside, like different from greens?
Oh, well, yeah. Are there, can you mention some perennial vegetables? Well, like what about like the onions, like walking onions the lovage? Or the other?
Oh, yeah, I have lovage. Yeah, and all the herbs and... Oh, I'm blanking right now. Okay. But yeah, what are you thinking of? What do you have?
I was just trying to brainstorm. Yeah, lovage is kind of like celery.
Yeah.
For people who don't know.
And, yeah, it's a really impressive plant. It gets very, very tall and it's very strong sort of flavor and smell, but it's good for soups and fish if you eat fish. And
yeah. Cool. Well, in my list of brainstorming ways to be refrigerator free or refrigerator light. Well, I should say that at my house, which is now the Flow Up, the 8 High Street, for like 10 years, we had a refrigerator, a chest refrigerator, a DC fridge that ran off of a freestanding solar panel and 2 boat batteries that we had. And then when that chest fridge died, we weren't very happy that it only lasted 10 years. I think the refrigerant sprouted a leak or something. But anyway, after that fridge was no longer working, we kept it as an ice box and we had a freezer in the basement and we had a couple of ice buckets, like 1 gallon like peanut butter bucket kind of things. And so each morning and each evening we would rotate out the buckets. We'd bring the frozen one up from the basement and put the thawed one back in the freezer in the basement. And we did that for 3 years until we finally got a new fridge. And the new fridge that we got was actually our old freezer, which we moved up to the kitchen. And then we got an adapter from a beer making store in Northampton. You can buy this adapter for like $75 that converts a freezer into a fridge. So we got to keep the chest freezer design, which it's a lot more efficient. I don't really quite understand how it works beyond the fact that the cold air is not falling out. But it somehow, like, I don't know, the freezers and the fridges work differently. But it's quiet and uses less electricity. Gets a little swampy in the bottom.
Isn't there that thing, too, where the converting a freezer to a refrigerator, that the freezers have more insulation or something? And so somehow, what's the deal? There's something
like
that.
It could be. Oh, because they are built to hold for really cold things. That makes sense.
Yeah, and then you can adjust the temperature. There's something like that where adapting it makes some sense if it's something that already exists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and our freezer, we also, the setting, we usually keep it around 45, 46 degrees instead of 36.
That's a big difference.
Yes, it's a big difference. And you know, the stuff that's in there is either stuff that we're going to eat, like leftovers that we'll eat within 2 to 3 days, or like condiment kind of things that will last a while. So.
And I notice you keep a lot of things in your entrance mudroom.
Yeah, this time of year.
And that keeps them cooler this time of year too.
Yeah. Yeah, or sometimes like setting things, warm things outside to cool down. But then you lose that heat. I usually let them cool down. Like if we have soup or something that we've cooked. Okay, here's another tip. To make food last longer without refrigeration, say you cook a big pot of soup, and then while it's still really hot, if you know you're going to have more than you and your housemates or family are going to eat that night, then I put it in jars immediately, kind of like canning, just like canning. And then I put it in glass jars with lids immediately, those stuff that I know I'm going to want to keep. And then when that cools down to room temperature, then I might put it outside. The glass jars are nice because they're animal proof.
Yeah, I keep most things either in like a ceramic thing with a lid or like a bread box or hanging in onion baskets. To keep them away from critters.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought of something else, Ruthie, that's because I'm foraging and buying bulk and trying to grow food and know where there are food resources in the neighborhood and go to farm stands. I'm also not bringing in a lot of packaging, and that's actually really, really important when you're mostly traveling by bicycle, because so far I don't have like a dump sticker or anything like that. So I can save things up for a really long time before I have to try to find a way to dispose them or carry them somewhere or anything like that. Yeah, so that's really helpful too.
Yeah, yeah, the things you have to think about when you not just put it in the car. You know, now that I'm using this e-bike a lot, you wouldn't believe how inefficiently I do things around town.
Luxury.
Like today, like I got a kiddie trailer on me that was being thrown in scrap metal that one of my coworkers from Cans for Cancer wants. She lives in Florence. Valley Recycling is halfway to East Hampton. I was out there today doing some at Cans for Cancer at Valley doing some things, and I was like, hey, I can bring that trailer back to Florence for you if you want, because it was missing the hitch part. And I said, yeah, I'll go by the bike lab. We have an extra hitch there. So I rode from Valley Recycling with that little trailer on the back of my trailer with my e-bike all the way out to the bike lab on Northern Ave and then back to Florence. Now, if I didn't have an e-bike and I was just doing my own power, I would have like dropped the trailer at like Stop and Shop or somewhere, unhitched, ridden out of the bike lab, come back. But oh, the things you can really save some time when you got motors.
Yeah, actually, and also another thing, the way that I have myself organized right now is that you have to really stack when you have a task to do. You know, you're like, okay, I'm going into town, I'm bringing everything, or I'm getting everything, or if I'm getting a ride, we're going to do it all in one run. So it's sort of, depending on where you live, you have to be more efficient. Down here, it's just so easy to get places because it's flat and you got the bike path, which is so, so great.
Yeah. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is Shira.
Hello. Hello.
Shira, and I'm your host, Ruthie. And this is Odyssey, talking about a little simple living here. Hang on. Sorry. I'm really having some technical difficulties here, but no one should be surprised. That's how Out There works. Now, this is Odyssey. All right, welcome back to Out There. I don't know why I would say welcome back to Out There. It's all out there. And this is my housemate, Max. We'll see if I can get the tech going on this. It's the beginning of March 2024. My housemate, Max, is working on their seamstress business. Max, how can people find you?
Oh, well, you could find me in person every Saturday. I'm in the Masonic Street Laundromat in downtown Northampton. I'm there from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. If any of your clothes, they aren't quite working right, like, whoa, you ripped a big hole in your pants, or, oh, your pants, they've always been a little too long, and you want them to be shorter or something. Really, whatever it is, there's a pretty good chance I can do it. Is your zipper broken? I've got zippers I could put on. But yeah, anyways, you could come in. You could come in with your clothes and we could look and we could talk. And I do like customer chooses pricing. Like really it's flexible for any budget. So don't let the dollar signs scare you away. I just want to fix your stuff and help it keep working for you.
So people can come in with their clothes. Will you help out people if they come in without their clothes?
Well, you know, we could talk about it. And I could be like, why don't you come in again next time?
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, welcome to back to the live people in the studio on Out There. That's me and Shira. And before the break, Shira and I were talking about refrigerators and freezers a little bit. Did you want to say something in particular about freezers, Shira?
Well, I wanted to, you know, true confessions. I don't have a freezer at home either, but my sweetie does. And whenever there's a huge surplus, like maybe there's an event and they have a whole bunch of food that they're going to throw out, we'll take it, we'll compost some, we might feed something to the chickens, but we basically stock up the freezer. So I do when I am at my place. Sometimes I'll take some things from his place and then that'll like keep me for the week or 2 weeks or something like that. Yeah. And it means that it's a little more variety in the winter. So I feel like that helps me eat a little more healthy in the winter. And I know that there are ways to not have freezers and I haven't gotten there yet. I would like to. But yeah, true confessions, freezers are pretty handy.
Yeah, I agree. Do you know that I'm still drinking chocolate milk from the hot chocolate run at the beginning of December? Yeah, we were working that run. And at the end of the event, there was we had like a 5 gallon bucket plus that we were like, hey, if it's leftover, you can just hose it right into here. So then we brought home the 5 gallon bucket and divvied it up into many, many, many little containers. Many little containers. And every couple of days, I take one out of the freezer and defrost it and add it to my tea or whatever I'm drinking. Also, another thing that helps us with food management and trying to not waste or have too much is we have the fridge out on the rail trail, which it's not actually a plugged in refrigerator like it once was because that part broke, but it's a take it or leave it food pantry. So if I find extra stuff, I can put it out there, or sometimes people drop off extra school lunches. I don't know who drops off the school, who's got the school lunch hookup, but it's kind of convenient because
yeah, there's some nice soups in there, canned soups right now. There's some pastas, but there's also some like beautiful tea herbs, I think, at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Always different.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to Out There. Now I'm going to play a clip or two from Kentucky that I played last week. But this is this week. February 3rd, Saturday, February 3rd, 2024. I'm in Ewing, Virginia at the livestock auction.
Bob, Davis, thank you, sir. Right here, you got a pretty good little boy in it. And here, you bought a boat, right? And we're going to get on in. I'm going to get on 250. 2 and a half. I'm going to get on 2 and a half. I'm going to get on 200. I'm going to get on 275. 875. We're going to get 50. Let's go. 850. You're going to get 150. You're going to get 100. Go on 10. 110, 20, 30, 40. We're going to get 150. We're going to get 160. We're going to get 160. We're going to get 150. 160. 160. 170. We're going to get 170. Hit about 60, about 70. We're going to get 160. We're going to get 170. 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 Upper 160. Let's look at her. Is that a nanny? Yeah. I'd be a big old nanny right there. Hit on her, little take home nanny. And here, did you get on her? Did you get on down? And here, did you get down? 25. 25. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20. 20.
So Chris got two bottle calves that he bid on and got for about, I don't know, $200 a piece, something like that. And now we're loading them in the back of the minivan to take an hour's drive home. Actually, Chris only got one bottle calf. And then when we got it home to the goats, because my brother, Chris, he really raises goats, dairy goats. He's not doesn't really raise cows. But if he finds a calf that's been abandoned by its mother, a bottle calf, then he'll teach it to nurse the goats. And that way, he doesn't get carpal tunnel syndrome from milking 10 goats every morning and every night. He has a calf do the milking. And then when he wants milk, he separates them. And then when the calf gets big, and after like a year later, then he takes the cow, heifer, cow, calf, cow, bovine, back to the auction as a grown, partially grown creature. Domesticated animals, pets, humans. It's a situation. Next we have Brandon. This is from, Brandon was someone that I met in February when I was in Kentucky. And we were flyering together outside of the Food City in Middlesboro, Kentucky, trying to encourage people to buy supplies for the domestic violence shelters. It's a whole annual event that happens once a year, at least in Kentucky, by the Kentucky Domestic Violence Association or something puts it on. Shop and share. You shop and you share. Buy a little extra. On the list that we would hand people, yeah, we were just handing people shopping lists saying, hey, if there's anything on this list that you can add to your shopping list today, you could just drop it off at the table on your way out, and it'll go to the shelter, the domestic violence shelter. So it's a nice awareness-raising event and chance to network. And I was networking with Brandon, so here he is.
It's February 10th, 2024. It's the annual Shop and Share for Domestic Violence. I'm standing out here outside Food City with my co-flyer-er. I don't know if you, what's your name?
Brandon.
And Brandon was talking about his work situation, which is, so like, where do you work?
CTA Acoustics,
and Corbin. And before you moved to Pineville, where were you commuting from?
Harlan.
Harlan to Corbin?
Yeah.
How far is that?
80 miles.
80 miles?
Yep.
Every day?
Yep.
What is your work shift like?
7 to 7, makes for a long day.
Overnight?
Yeah.
7 p.m. to 7 a.m.? Wait, yep. 12-hour shift?
Yep. 6 days a week.
6 days a week? And yeah. how long would your commute take you?
It's 3 hours a day, hour and a half each way.
80 miles. Yeah. Wow. That costs, too, gas, car, and all that?
Yeah, time you drive and work, that's about it.
Uh-huh. What's CTA?
They make acoustics for your car, thermal acoustics. It's fiberglass products.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And thermal acoustics. What does it look like? What's that like?
The thermal is the heat. Like it's folds over the like the fiberglass. It keeps like the heat from the motor to the firewall and from inside your car. So, they make a lot of different parts.
And where does it go inside the car?
Pretty much outlines your old car, your firewall, your dash, your doors, your hood, your trunk, your over your spare tire. Just a lot of different places.
What's your role in the manufacture of this?
I run the molds, the parts.
Do you know where the stuff, like where it goes after it leaves that factory?
Most of ours go to Flint, Michigan, to the Ford plant. The largest one. It's the largest one in the United States.
Wow.
Ford is 70% of their business.
Wow.
It's $500 million a year business. So it's, money.
Money.
I worked in coal mines 20 years.
You were in coal mines?
Yeah, I worked in coal mines 20 years. And I got this mess here and had to do a little bit of something different. Had to have a night shift job, that way I could do my stuff during the day. So. It's a big change for me. Go from 5 miles underground to working with 700 people is a little bit different.
When you were underground, like by yourself? Or how many people were around?
They're probably 10 of us, or something. It's nothing like working in a factory.
Do you have like a preference? What are some of the pros and cons?
I'd rather work in the coal mines. Any day. Coal mines, it's cool in the summer, warm in the winter. Other than that, it's dangerous. Don't get me wrong, but it's dangerous driving to work too, So, it's just what all you want to do, I guess. Don't have to itch with the fiberglass.
How's the air quality, like breathing, compare in each place?
They'll be about the same. You can see the coal dust floating in there, or you can see the fiberglass floating in there. So it's just, that and there is a...
You wear a mask?
I don't, but you can. It don't seem to bother me, so.
Do you ever worry about it, building up, long-term lung damage?
They say it can. Coal dust, they give you black lung. But now I've done it 20 years, and it's not really affected me yet. So, as far as fiberglass, I can't really, tell any difference other than the itching. But I'm sure you breathe some of it. Because you can see it floating in the air, so I'm sure you breathe some of it. But it don't affect me, so.
Yeah. How old are you?
43. Hmm. Yeah, I was married for 21 years and got a divorce and got 4 girls and 5 grandbabies.
Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Shop and Share today to support survivors of domestic violence. So we're trying to get supplies for the local shelter. If there's anything on this shopping list that you're able to add to yours today, we'd really appreciate it. You could drop it off on the table on your way out.
Thank you.
You're listening out there on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie, and that was Brandon from Harlan, Kentucky. Holy smokes is all I say every time I listen to that interview when he was telling me those things. A lot of people hustling like that, putting their bodies at risk to make things that people want. Next on out there, I'll play some Gene Ritchie.
Oh, when I was a curly-headed baby, my daddy set me down upon his knee. Said, son, you go to school and learn your letters. Don't be no dusty miner like me. I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler. Coal cars roaring and rumbling past my door. Now they're standing rusty, rolling empty. And the yelling is, stop here anymore. I used to think my daddy was a black man with scrip enough to buy the company store. But now he goes downtown with empty pockets and his face is white.
as the February snow. And I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler. Coal cars roaring and rumbling past my door. Now they're standing rusty, rolling empty. And the L&M don't stop here anymore. Last night I dreamt I went down to the office to get my payday like I'd done before. Them old cudsy vines had covered up the doorway, and there was trees and grass, well, a-growing right through the floor. Yes, I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler. Coal cars roaring and rumbling past my door. Now they're standing rusty, rolling empty. And the L&M don't stop here anymore. Well, I never thought I'd live to love the coal dust. Never thought I'd pray to hear the tipple roar. But Lord, how I wish that grass could change to money. Them greenbacks fill my pockets once more. And I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler. Coal cars roaring and rumbling past my door. Now they're standing rusty, rolling empty. And the L&M don't stop here anymore.
And that was Gene Ritchie. Now I think it's time to go to a hot tub. So for my next clip, let's see, we have Fabian, who I ran into when I was at the Catholic Worker in Knoxville last month. And I think that's about right here on this clip.
It's still raining, but I did make it to the Catholic Worker and ran into Fabian. Fabian, what are you doing?
I'm screwing a nozzle to another copper piece. And it's for a hot bath. In the outside, in the rain.
So it's the copper, you bent copper tubing and stuck it inside the old wood stove from inside the house?
Yes, exactly.
How did you get the copper tubing bent into a coil without it kinking?
So I filled the tube with water and I kinked it on the ends. So that the water, intentionally, that the water is trapped in the coil, or it wasn't the coil, in the pipe. And after this, you can bend this pipe with less danger of kinking, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it worked quite okay.
You had like a little bit of a mold kind of guy?
There was a mold. I was bending it around, built out of like two old buckets. Uh-huh. Buckets are great tools. Uh-huh. And yeah.
So the coil is inside the wood box of
exactly.
The stove.
Yeah.
And then it's a little bit lower than the bathtub. Can you describe that, how that works a little bit?
Yeah. So there's this physics thing called thermosiphon. And it relies on that water that is hot expands and raises. And so you have a reservoir of water, what's your hot tub or whatever, and you have a coil of copper. And as long as your copper coil that's getting heated in fire or whatever sits lower as your reservoir, the water is circulating on its own because the reservoir pressure puts cold water into the coil. That's getting heated and get pushed up into your reservoir.
It's circulating, like it's a closed system.
Yes, that's the idea.
Well, yeah.
It's not working all the time, so we will see.
I guess it's not really a closed system because the reservoir is open to the human and the air.
Yeah, and it's raining right now into it, so we have to pour less water into the bathtub. Yeah, but that's basically how it works.
How did you get the idea, inspiration, motivation to do this?
So Lisa, I'm living here with, has, as I learned, a desire for a hot tub for years. And I'm staying here on this property with them. And I said, I want to do something that I can stay here in your camper. Mm-hmm. And this was our deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm making a bathtub for a living.
Have you made them before?
I've met them 2 years ago. I was traveling with friends from Europe through the US. And we ended up in Knoxville. And we ended up here, which was very nice that I get to know them.
Mm-hmm. Have you made hot tubs before?
Yes, I've made a couple of hot tubs before. Onsens. So onsen is the word for the Japanese hot tub. And I've built like a very big one and another small one like this.
Cool. Are you going to get to try it before you go back home?
That's the goal. That's why I'm out in the rain. Normally I would do it with nicer weather, but I'm leaving in 2 days for home. So I'm a little bit in a hurry to go in and to clean myself before I go home to mama.
Well, good. I hope it works out.
Yeah, I think so. I think it works out. We have a little bit of water seal problems, but that's normal and that should be fixable.
What do you really like about hot tubs?
What do you like about hot tubs? Like, I really like this very simple hot tub. Like, there are lots of people with hot tubs that are crazy engineered today, but I think a simple hot tub is a beautiful thing. And like, you are not so lucky always that you live beside a hot spring. Mm-hmm. That is out in the nature and like in the beautiful place, especially where I come from in Europe, it's not around. And so you have to build your own. And mm-hmm. That's a nice thing. I think bathing outside in the night, looking at the stars, drinking a beer or whatever is a nice thing. And to be clean is generally a nice thing, I think.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Fabian from Germany via Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Also, Valley Free Radio streams online at valleyfreeradio.org. Next Friday. For some reason, I thought next Friday was the 8th. According to the note I have from the organizer, it says Friday, March 8th, International Women's Day. But when I look at the calendar on the wall, I'm squinting, but I really think it says Friday is March 9th. Oh, that's February. That's February. Okay, so Friday, March 8th. Trust the organizer. Friday, March 8th, International Women's Day 2024. We mourn, we resist, we organize. It says peace and justice for Palestinians and all peoples. Friday, March 8th in Northampton, 4:15, Raging Grannies will sing at City Hall. 4:30, a rally at City Hall. 5 o'clock, march to Lyman Hall at First Churches. And from 5:30 to 7, there'll be a social gathering with refreshments in Lyman Hall. Sponsored by Western Mass Code Pink. And funded by the Markham Nathan Fund. Anyway, Friday, next Friday, March 8th, downtown Northampton. Another announcement. This came through my Surge Showing Up for Racial Justice listserv. They were trying to spread the word about a study. It's actually done by the University of Minnesota. But they're looking for white mothers who want to parent in anti-racist ways. It's called the Carpe Diem Study. That's an acronym, Carpe Diem. We'll get to that. Our research team is interested in how to support parents in parenting their children around topics of culture and race. In this new online study called the Carpe Diem Study, we are investigating the most effective ways to support white mothers in anti-racist parenting. The study involves 6 weeks of online Carpe Diem program activities for you to do at home.
Some of these may also involve your child as part of your normal daily routines. And 3 60-minute sessions via Zoom for you and your child. That is, before your 6 weeks of online activities, after your 6 weeks of online activities, and a one-year follow-up. You and your child will meet with us on Zoom, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, if you're interested in it, just look up Carpe Diem Study, University of Minnesota. Ooh, I also wanted to share some stories about findings of the week. So one of my findings. So last week, not this past week, but the week before that, I was hauling trash and recycling like I do. And I don't know where I found it, but this Croc, you know those shoes? It wasn't a Croc, that's a brand name. But it was a soft, spongy slipper shoe that's pretty sturdy. And it was in really good shape. I don't know if it fell out of someone's recycling or was poking out of a trash bag or what. But it was one slipper shoe in good shape. And I was like, I don't know, I'll take it home. You never know when you might find another one. And I thought, you know what? I bet the customer threw it out because they couldn't find the other one. And I thought, you know what? I bet when they find the other one, they'll throw that out too. I did have that thought in my mind. Yes, I did. And then, so I set this shoe aside. And then I was like, Ruthie, why do you keep clutter? Get rid of this. You don't need one shoe. And I thought, well, maybe I'll find another shoe, even if it's not like the same color or brand, or maybe it'll be a similar one, but for the other foot. So I held on to that shoe. And then I forgot that I'd held on to it. I forgot where I'd put it. But then a week later, this past week, I'm hauling trash. I couldn't even remember who put out that shoe or what route it was on. So then this week, I'm hauling trash. You can see where the story's going, right? So this week, I'm hauling trash. I'm not thinking about shoes. No, I'm just throwing bags of trash in the compactor at Locust Street. And so I start to chuck this blue bag in the dumpster. And it's kind of a little heavy and awkward. And it's got some sharp, pointy things in it. So I actually had it in the compactor ready to slide down the chute. But as right before I let go of it, some of the sharp, pointy things ripped open the bag. But things didn't fall out. It ripped it open and it was like some helicopter drone or something. I don't know what was in there, but it looked kind of interesting. So I was like, whoa, why don't I inspect this bag before I throw it down, especially because one of my coworkers who really has a fondness for electronic things, he was there unloading his trailer too, and I'm like, oh, I'll show this to my coworker, he'll get a kick out of it, even if there's nothing in here I can use. And so I pulled it back out and brought it back to my trailer and said to my coworker, hey, check this out. And so we were pulling out like a Bluetooth speaker and some cables and wires that I put in scrap metal. And this, that, and the other. And then there was a shoe. There was this soft, spongy, Croc-like shoe. And I was like, oh, this seems to be the same color as that one I found last week. I wonder if it's for the other foot. I wonder if this is the same customer. I wonder if I even remember where I put the other one. So I was like, well, I'll bring this one home. You know, last week, I was okay with having one stray shoe. If I can't find last week's stray shoe, I guess I'm okay with having one stray shoe this week, too. So I brought that shoe home and kind of it bounced around the house for a little bit and there were like, and then between the garage and the coat room and the shoe rack and my room, I couldn't keep track of how many black spongy shoes were bouncing around. And this morning I had one in one hand and one in the other hand at the same time. They matched. They were a pair. I reunited the lone shoes. All right, you're listening to Out There Today. Oh, and then, another thing that was in the bag was a disco light, a disco party light. So what a great way to celebrate the shoes reuniting. And my housemate Max put the disco party light on a what we call a kilowatt. It measures how much wattage it uses. So this disco party light, you turn on, you put it in the lamp, it screws into a regular bulb, a regular socket. And then you turn it on, and it's got like three little LED lights that are red, green, and blue, maybe. And then it's got the head thing spins. It turns very slowly, so it has this kaleidoscope kind of effect on the ceiling. Probably the rest of America has seen these things before. I was pretty excited, though. And so we put the kilowatt on it to see how much electricity it used. How much electricity you're going to use to have a good time. And you know what it said? It was sucking 1 watt. It was like so little. I expected it to be a little bit more. Like you can't even get an LED light for 1 watt, hardly. And I think because the mechanism in there that was turning it. Well, okay, so it was just these very small LED lights. And then the turning mechanism that kind of made the noise, it was just like a clock. You know how clocks, wall clocks, they run off a, usually off a AA battery, and any AA battery that no longer works for your Walkman, you can put in a clock on the wall and get the rest of the juice out of it, because clocks use very little electricity. So it's essentially, I think this disco party light was essentially a clock spinning thing with a mechanism on it. Anyway, stay tuned for Democracy Now. Don't forget to have a party sometimes, and I don't know, take care of your mental health and love one another. End of preaching. Thanks for listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio.
This is Ivano Bellini, and you're tuned to Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM, WXOJ LP in Northampton, Massachusetts.